Whoa! I don't think I even want to hear your story.
All of you must hear the Scarlet Spider story.
My name is Ben Reilly. I'm related to this reality's Peter Parker.
How?
I'm his clone. Or maybe he's my clone. We're not sure.
I'm the real Spider-Man.
I don't know what kind of mind game this is, but I'm the real Spider-Man. The real Peter Parker.
You see, I'm really, really clones.
I thought I was that clone. I tried to stay out of Peter's life by taking on a new identity. Dyed my hair, changed my name to Ben Reilly. When I became a costume hero, the Scarlet Spider, it really made him angry. But the next big blow came from Dr. Kurt Connors. He discovered that, according to our genetic structures, it might be Peter who was the clone, not me. That news pushed Peter Parker over the edge. Now he hated me with a passion.
This is starting to sound like a bad comic book plot.
It gets worse.
Why didn't you just tell me I was a clone?
The cloning process has proven unstable.
Welcome back, Cloneheads, to the very special edition of the Clone Saga Chronicles podcast. This particular episode, Bertone is off doing Amazing Spider-Man Classics, so just filling in for this particular episode is kind of sort of filling in, is Kevin Cushing, who if you will remember his lovely Kentuckian voice on a voicemail he left for us, and he's a longtime fan of the show. He's a really good friend of mine from the Spider-Man Crawl Space podcast. Him and I were the part of the trio of the founding fathers of that show, and really all around good guy. He's reason why he's on the show. Some people are like, why are you having Kevin on the show? Well, if you've not read his webcomic Spider-Man Crawl Space, go do it now. It's a really enjoyable jaunt. If you're a guy that really misses the marriage and misses Mary Jane being an integral part of Spider-Man's life, it's definitely a worth a look. But moreover, in issue 12, spoiler alert, he does something that no writer has dared ever do, and that's bring back Ben Reilly. They'll bring back Kane, but they won't bring back Ben Reilly. So, and he actually brought him back at the end of 11, and the issue 12 is the debut of a whole new Ben Reilly. So, Kevin, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on, man. We little side story, right quick. You were actually approached to do the show originally.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And we approached him to do the show, and he's like, I'll politely decline. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever.
Actually, I was worse than that. At first, I agreed.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So long. And then I think I finally read through enough of the Clone Saga that I thought, you know, there's some great stuff in here, but I don't think I want to have to reread all of this right now.
Right. Oh God. And you know, in the chronological listening, we're, you know, Maximum Clonage part, you know, part two should be coming out pretty soon, but yeah. By the time this show is released, it'll be already be out, and hopefully I'm pretty sure the B side will be out too. But damn.
Exactly.
You know, and Exile is really a forgettable story, which is the story immediately following Maximum Clonage. And then you've got Time Bomb and Greatest Responsibility. Time Bomb is time garbage, and Greatest Responsibility is filled with some good moments, with some bad moments too.
I never even read Time Bomb, actually. When I did my Clone Saga read through, the goal was to get the Ben Reilly and Kane characters down for Crawl Space. So I looked at Time Bomb, said, "Dear God, that looks terrible," and I don't think I'm going to read it. So I skipped it.
You know, Time Bomb was kind of a pointless story. It was really story filler. When you look at it, the way they ended Time Bomb, and it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, I knew what it was about, too, and I'm thinking, well, I know Peter's not the clone, so who gives a rat's ass?
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that part of the whole thing is just a giant headache. Trying to explain all of that, of you know, if he's not the clone, then why did he have that implant? It's god awful.
There's some stuff I'm never going to touch in Crawl Space, folks.
Yeah, just okay. So I'm gonna quote Michael Bailey. Give us your superhero origin story concerning the Clone Saga.
Well, the Clone Saga was actually my first Spider-Man comics. The Revelations arc was the first Spider-Man comics that my mom bought for me after having seen the Spider-Man animated series on Fox, and I loved it. You know, it's the Clone Saga might have been the most mired in continuity story of all freaking time, and yet as a kid, I just dove into it. I didn't know who this Ben Reilly was to start out with, but it seemed pretty obvious. They were kind of like brothers. It was a cool relationship. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it had that big finish with Norman Osborn coming back, who I didn't really know was dead to begin with, but it was cool. It was great. So that was kind of my Clone Saga origin. And over time, you know, I hadn't really gone back to it much until meeting you.
Yes. You know, it's funny because for a long time, we were like the few and the proud. Mm-hmm. The Clone Saga fans on the internet, because
well, the few,
yeah, not necessarily the proud, but the biggest issue when we were in the infancy of the internet, back when Spidey.com was first being launched and everything, back when it was still being hosted by a free web service, tells you how long ago that was. We were the only website that was doing Ben Reilly scans and Ben Reilly pictures and Ben Reilly wallpapers and stuff like that. We were the only website. So, eventually we carved out the niche. The biggest contributor to keeping Spidey.com alive was Brad. And I have a staff now, although it doesn't seem like it. But I do have a staff. We are kind of dibble dabbing working on stuff. But you know. Like you, Kevin, I was a child of the Clone Saga, so that's my Spider-Man. Kind of like, this is a bad reference, but to Joe Quesada, his Spider-Man's the late '60s, early '70s.
Yeah,
Peter Parker, and my Peter Parker was
Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly, and Ben Reilly and Peter Parker, because my first issue was right after Aunt May died, and that's probably why I don't like Aunt May. Because,
well, there are a variety of reasons not to like Aunt May, let's face it.
Especially the one-dimensional characterization that we seem to be continually getting. But,
yep.
You know, my first issue was Spectacular 223, which was Aftershocks Part 2.
That kind of awesome black cover with the cutout spider that you can open and see a bunch more images through it, right?
Yeah, that is the you got the diecast version. They actually had the photo stand version or newsstand version, which wasn't. It just had it was kind of stupid. They just took basically a photo of the image and that was the cover. You didn't have the gatefold. Don't ask me why.
Well, there wasn't a lot of really awesome stuff hidden under there to begin with.
You know, the pencils were great. The ink.
Oh no, it was good. I'm just saying you saw all the good parts through the spider, so don't worry about it.
Exactly.
you don't really need the full image of the wonderful jackal. Let's face it.
Yeah. No. I mean, really. That was probably, I got really criticized on the show for this, but the rose-colored glasses. I still think that's probably one of the better issues with Sienkiewicz and Buscema's artwork. Just
that
wasn't
the one with good old freak face in the sewers, was it?
No.
Okay, then that was actually disagree with you entirely.
that was 224, and damn.
I think of Sienkiewicz, I think of, you know, the big ugly monkey Peter Parker in the sewers, and ooh.
Yeah, Mark of Cain. That was a storyline that would give you nightmares, just in its absurdity. I mean, it's like, oh, cool. Oh, hey, let's do a story where we get all three Peter Parkers together, and then we have Peter Parker burst in the door. That's what I would like to know. Ha ha! And I am wearing a life beater because that's what I wear in jail. You know, and you got, and I love Ben's. You know, things are about to get really interesting. Dum dum dum. Horrible.
And I remember thinking that the trial of Peter Parker was mostly what I had wanted out of the Mark of Cain, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you can really tell they're stalling.
Yeah. Was that five part story four?
Yeah, exactly. The Mark of Cain, pretty much epic fail. Trial of Peter Parker, you found. Oh, God. And when you're reading it in sequential order, knowing what's going to happen. The Jacob Raven storyline was dragged out forever. Like, I think Bertone talked about this in one of the other episodes, but he he's like, yeah, I mean, Jacob Reber's been ready to pounce for like 6 months, but you know, we're waiting until issue 400. Woohoo! Yeah.
Well, I had read it in chronological order, so I actually got well, not chronological order, but publishing order. So I got Lost Years kind of where it was supposed to be without getting all that story beforehand and going, what's the tension here?
Yeah. And you know, I love the fact that they, in the trades, they did Lost Years first. You know, they did Birth of Spider-Man, Lost Years, and then the build-up pages, and then, of course, Grace or Power Responsibility. But at the same time, it really kind of does diminish the tension.
Yeah, I think it's double-edged. I mean, on the one hand, you want the first thing that they read when they open this trade, if they're not familiar with the Clone Saga, to be the awesome pinnacle of the Clone Saga that was Lost Years.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they're going to get bored with old Jacob just kicking around for several months.
Well, and I mean, these things are huge. I mean, they're ginormous. And the fact that they're throwing Planet of the Simians in there is just ridiculous.
I really wish we did not. Sadly, you know, I bought that.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh.
I wished I hadn't.
Michelinie's not his finest hour, that inconsistent artwork.
Yeah, and you want to talk about the flip side, the Ben Reilly lizard?
Yeah,
mess?
That is one of the few stories I've not read, and I'm kind of glad.
Don't.
Well, we're going to be... the way that we're supposedly going to be doing this, we got a big, giant... We got the B-side of Max Clonage, the epic crossover with Teenage Wasteland and Ultimate Spider-Man podcast that we're doing, the Ultimate Clone Saga. We've got, and after that we're gonna do Lost Years and Planet of the Simians, simply because they're in the trades, doing a little earlier than I thought that we would be doing them. But because they're already in the trades, I figured we might as well get those two out of the way. So we'll be doing those. So yeah,
this
we're gonna review
the reason that I turned down the spot on the podcast right there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I like that they're thorough, but damn.
yeah, I wouldn't want to leave much out. But,
well, I mean, you know, and if they start putting the Spider-Man team-up issues in there, I'd be like, holy crap.
Well, if you're putting Planet of the Symbiotes in there, you may as well put the Venom Along Came a Spider miniseries in there, and damn.
Oh, God. Those Venom miniseries were just awful anyway. Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty much one of the better examples, too.
which I don't know what that says about the other miniseries. But, okay. So, briefly describe to me, because you haven't released subsequent issues since you released issue 12. Because, for the record, folks, if you weren't following along, issue 12 was released the same day as part 4 of One Moment in Time. To counteract the crap that was going to be going out. So, what kind of in the vaguest of terms, what are your plans for Ben Reilly in general? Are you, without trying to give too much away, because I know you got some really insane, huge subplots that the last freaking scene, dude. If those of you that have read it, it's a pretty huge, significant scene.
Yeah, I was thoroughly expecting you to shit your pants.
I might have soiled myself a little. considering the giant, basically rewriting this issue, that issue is like a giant love letter to me, in the straightest way possible. I mean that.
Yeah, the totally hetero.
Exactly. Is it because, okay, one of the big dynamics that was established really late in the Clone Saga was, you've got the married Peter Parker that's, you know, that's grown and matured and everything like that. And then you've got the young, swinging, hip Peter Parker that's really been left unexplored. So you can kind of go forward. And it's the solution to the quote-unquote problem that the Spider-Man titles have had since the marriage.
You can have cake. You can eat cake. You can have icing on your cake, too. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But Marvel doesn't want no tasty cake.
Well, it's got to be Peter Parker because the movies. No, it doesn't.
Well,
I agree
Spider-Man has to be Peter Parker, but...
Well, yeah.
And you know, for anybody that's listening that hasn't read what we're talking about, you can now go to crawlspacecomic.com, and it'll redirect you right into the forum on the Spider-Man Crawlspace message board that houses all these issues.
And you can go back from the beginning and read from issue 1 through issue 12.
Yeah, or you can pick up pretty much anywhere you want to. I put a pretty decent recap at the top of every issue, even though I realized when I was writing the recap to number 12, I was like, damn, this is like 2 pages long. Building so up different continuity here.
you're having your series Bible in front of you, and you're like, crap.
Well, and that one up was the first time I also included a review for what had come before in the Marvel Spider-Man titles, because I wanted to give a review of basically who Ben Reilly was. And I think I did a pretty decent job of trimming the Clone Saga down to about a paragraph.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, and that's why I tell people, because when Mike Bailey and I did that show, episode 104 of Views from the Long Box, that's what I kind of told him. I said, at the core of the Clone Saga, it's a 2-year-long story, but the three best elements of the Clone Saga are Ben, Kane, and Norman. Even though Norman's the guy that comes in at the very end, when you look at it from, when you read it again through the prism of Norman being behind everything, it really does, you know, fit fairly well.
Although now, there's still things out there, like, you know, reading the whole thing of Gaunt trying to get regenerated. Like, dude, that's clearly Harry.
Yeah.
I don't care what you told me later, that dude is Harry.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, and they even threw out, could it be Harry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the exact
right
phrase. Thank you, Bob Harris, who is the new EIC of DC, which just baffles my mind.
I'll wait and see how that goes.
Well, if you want to hear more of my thoughts on that, you can check out Burning Talking Points Presents The Return, where I completely just rip on what Bob Gale did. Excuse me, Bob Harris, not Bob Gale.
Because you can rip on Bob Gale all damn day, but it's not relevant.
The only thing Bob Gale did well, I think, was Back to the Future Part 1.
But you also have to give Bob Harris credit for, didn't he come up with the idea to bring Norman back?
He did come up with it. That's the one saving grace. Yeah. Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because we got this, the new Norman, Norman. Which, when you read JR's articles, it's like, okay, I see the lie, JR. I'm sorry, JR Fettinger of being from SpideyGeeksButt.com.
His Goblin Prince series about Harry Osborn just gave me so much material for Harry in this series.
Oh yeah, I mean, okay. Spoiler alert: we're gonna change.
Oh yeah, what? We can do. But number 12 has been out for almost a month now, and by the time this podcast is out, it'll be over a month. So, full spoilers, guys. Go read it before you keep listening.
Okay, what you've done in the space of 12 issues of Crawl Space, you've killed off Norman Osborn. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's huge.
Decapitated his ass right up front.
Okay, you completely reversed the deal with the devil, and brought, in the process, bringing back a character named Killshot that was used in one issue of JMS's run.
That I loved.
Yeah.
Of course, I also killed him, so I guess I'm kind of a bastard.
You have Aunt May die and get her useless sack of bones out of the title.
Is issue one.
Yeah, this is all in issue one. Issue two, you kill off Norman Osborn. Issue bring back Harry Osborn as a villain, not as this whiny little bitch named James Franco.
With an earring.
And then you had your big long story arc called Spider-Man Black, where you brought back you brought in a character named the Black Spider, who is Simon Parker. Epic new villain. You also...
I thought people were going to crucify me for there until I got the origin story out.
Right, because there was a shit ton of wait time between. Yeah.
Well, and when you're writing something that is, as much as I hate the phrase, fan fiction, and you introduce a long-lost evil brother, I freely admit that looks like, oh, this is going to be some shit. And I knew that's what it was going to look like when I did it, but just kept telling people, you know, wait for the origin, I think you'll like it. And for the most part, I think people really did.
Yeah, well, and because the way you interwove within continuity, you completely brought elements in. He brought in the Red Skull and stuff like that. In fact, you and I are on the Crawl Space Fight Club forum. We're fighting, we're squaring off against each other, Black Spider versus Red Skull, which is funny shit.
And Zach told me beforehand that he was going to pick somebody that I couldn't possibly vote against. I was thinking, well, I've already used Kyle Rayner. Can it really just be Morbius? And like, I don't really want to win this battle.
Well, I'll tell you right now, straight up, I was going to pick Stella from CSA.
Oh, but that would have been even worse, almost.
Yeah, well, and
almost.
But,
well, you could have picked me from CSA. That would have been something.
No, I thought
fight yourself, Kevin. Do it.
Well, if I had picked Kevin, then you could have picked Zach, and that would have been hilarious.
No, if you picked Kevin, he's a vampire, so I probably would have just gone balls to the wall and picked Morbius.
Right.
And I think we've just born another friendly Fire Fight Club match right here on the podcast.
Right. Anyway, you know, this is all what you've done in the space of 12 issues. Really, on top of that, you bring in, you know, these giant, massive amount of clones, which, okay.
Slightly inspired by if Maximum Clonage hadn't sucked.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, you could have said partially inspired by Maximum Clonage, which lasts all but like 16 pages in the Spider-Man Real Clone Saga trade,
yeah.
Which you can go pick up now, or actually pick up in December, excuse me.
Well, my problem was they never got out. It was a completely contained situation. Well, okay.
Right.
Why don't you just give a bunch of robots to fight? Who gives a rat's ass?
Yeah, well, and on top of that, one of the big climaxes of that story, you had Sienkiewicz and Buscema. Buscema, at that point, is phoning it in.
Well, Buscema, by that point, is drowned by Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
He's a guy that should never ink, because it ends up just being Sienkiewicz.
Exactly. And when you look at all the style, I mean, because at that point you had Stephen Butler and Mark Bagley, very similar artists. Then you had Tom Lyle, who's really similar, and then you have out of left field, this dark, and it'd be different if Spectacular was on its own doing its own dark and moody stuff, and it fit the tone of the story. But it really never really fit the tone of the rest of the story. It's just
like,
really,
whoa, I'm reading Spectacular now. Holy shit!
Exactly.
You'll be able to tell in the trades, even if they didn't put covers in there, trust me.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, when you look at the gorgeous artwork of Sienkiewicz, Buscema, with him and DeMatteis is running Spectacular from, 175 to really 210. I mean, some gorgeous artwork. By far, Buscema's best artwork.
On that run, was a huge influence on the Harry Osborn and Crawl Space too. I mean, the Child Within and the number 200, those kinds of stories. Ooh, damn.
Yeah. Okay. Let me throw this out at you. Should it have been Norman or Harry as the overall mastermind of the Clone Saga?
I think it's almost hard to say with hindsight because we know how much Norman Osborn being back has added to Spider-Man since then.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back on it, it seems like a great decision to bring Norman Osborn back for future Spider-Man stories. Mm-hmm. In the context of the Clone Saga, and in what had been going on before that with Harry's sort of from-the-grave stuff he had already been doing, it seems like it would make more story sense for it to be Harry.
Yeah.
But I really can't argue with bringing Norman back just because of what's happened since.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm down the same way. In story sense, I think it makes much more sense with Harry. And you can really tell, especially, and one of the things, the reason why everybody knows it was supposed to be Harry is because of the Life of Riley series, which is a series that has really helped the show be what it's been so far. Because it really gives you a ton of insight into what was going on behind the scenes. And how,
of course, if you've read any of the early stuff with Gaunt, you also know it was supposed to be Harry Osborn.
Yeah, okay, I'm not gonna lie. When I read, because Blood Brothers was my first full arc as a Spider-Man fan,
you're still here.
Yeah, I know, right? I love that arc. I mean, think about it. It starts off, boom, Ben Reilly unmasked.
I really liked the Ben Reilly and Jessica Carradine stuff going on.
Yeah.
I really
really
was... Honestly, I thought Dan Juergen's sensational run was one of the major highlights of the Clone Saga as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff he was doing there was great, especially with Ben as a character.
But I think he always wanted to write Peter Parker at the end of the day.
Which is funny because he did such a good job with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really speaks to how professional a writer he is. You know, even though he ended up leaving because it wasn't what he wanted to do, when he was there and he was given what he was given, he knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it wasn't what he really wanted to do.
I never, ever got the chance to complete his run. So I've just now recently read Sensational Number 6, which is the end of his very... I mean, 7 issues is an extremely short run.
Yeah.
But the overall symmetry, the way he bookended it with the Sensational Number 0, the first issue he had, was really spectacular. Sensational. I'll use the adjective that's described on the book.
Let's just say, you know, it was awesome.
It was really... Yeah, absolutely.
I like using that word because it's never been used before Spider-Man in a title.
Really great artwork, really strong writing, you know, and obviously I'm going to go into great detail when we get to this, to that book in the review section.
I really liked the character of Jessica Carradine and what he did with her, and I was kind of sad he wrote her out with his last issue, but to be fair, nobody else really picked up on her and ran with her. He was pretty much just using her in his title.
Yeah, that was his pet character.
And really, that was either an editorial or a writing weakness, because if other people had picked up on that and run with it, I think it could have been a much stronger, long-running story.
Really, it really brought a different element to the titles. There was the reboot. We'll call it the reboot within the reboot. the reboot after the abysmal Scarlet Spider titles, where when you read them, it's pretty clear that DeFalco and everybody and Mackie, they were phoning that in.
Oh, yeah. They probably... I don't know where the basic story came from, but I'm sure when they saw it, they were pretty much like, what the f*** is that?
Yeah, and again, we'll get into the details of that after... that's actually when we're doing our big call-in episode, too. But...
Your problem with that is going to be people having to read it to comment on it.
Well, we're saying, okay, everything up to that point, you can comment on.
I'll tell you right now, I'll call in and I'll talk about it, but I'll talk about it from memory of the last time I read it. I'm not rereading that shit for you.
Well, it's pretty abysmal. I mean, there's that really 4 or 5 months stretch of the titles at that time, excuse me. Really awful.
That is probably, I think, the low point of the Clone Saga, even worse than Maximum Clonage.
It's pretty damn close. I don't know. I think in terms of single issue, there is nothing more abysmal than Omega. But in terms of a story arc, yeah, that's pretty damn bad.
It just kept going.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed so much longer than it was, and there was nothing good in any one of them.
No.
And that's a big problem.
Well, I'll tell you, though, some of the better Buscema artwork with drawing the Scarlet Spider was in there.
Well, I'll tell you, I forget which series it was, but the very first one to come out, the first number one, was one of the best Scarlet Spider images I think I've seen. And I think it was Web of.
Yeah, the cover. And you open up the book and it's absolute crap.
Yeah, you try not to look past the cover. Those are one you just want to judge by the cover and forget everything else.
That is actually... That was the same artist that did I think, the most iconic cover of the Clone Saga in terms of Ben Reilly as the Scarlet Spider. That was Stephen Butler. They did both those covers. And that was
you're talking about being the introduction of the Scarlet Spider with the Exile Returns?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great one.
And
I also really loved the, I think it was Blood Brothers Part 1, the cover with the camera focused on him with his mask in his hands.
Oh, yeah.
Which was homaged for the cover to Crawl Space Number 9.
Yes, it was. Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about 1 in a Million. We briefly touched upon the basis of it and your thought process of making Maximum Clonage actually good. You went through and you made homages to different aspects of the Clone Saga throughout this story.
Mm-hmm.
The first cover is Peter in Ben's suit because event story reasons.
Which was important to me. I didn't want to just throw him into Ben Reilly's suit.
Yeah. Well, good, because that's what most people in fan fiction would do. but so obviously, you know, it's a homage to that particular cover. The second cover...
Second one was Black Cat and Toxin in an homage to Spider-Man Unlimited number 7 or 10.
I think 10, it's 7.
Or was it 7? Well, you know, find it.
Yeah.
It was just Toxin replacing Ben Reilly on that cover, which, damn, I thought David Krim, Hambone, did an amazing Toxin on that cover.
Yeah, I think he absolutely sold that cover. Probably one of the better Toxins I've seen, just in general.
Absolutely.
Although you did have a little mini controversy with the skimpovization, if I can use that word, of Black Cat.
I like to call it the zipping up of Black Cat.
There you go. Pretty much. I remember some guy complaining about it. It's really irrelevant. So you had that, and then the third cover was the most oblique.
It was extremely subliminal by the time Hambone was done with it. Because I intended it to be much more of a direct homage, and he just decided, that looks weird. The idea was to have, and of course, when you first see the cover, you don't know it's Ben Reilly, you think it's Peter Parker, but it is Ben Reilly on the cover, just having been reborn. The original idea that I had was, and do you know the issue number it was an homage to? I don't know the issue off the top of my head. It was Web of Spider-Man number something. It was a Power and Responsibility issue. 118, there you go. And it was the flip cover that was the Ben Reilly origin part of it. And, you know, when you look at that cover, that original cover, he's reaching up out of that clone tank. So my original thought was to have Ben Reilly on the ground, having just been reborn, kind of reaching up, just like he is from that clone tank. But Hambone said he thought a naked dude on the pavement just kind of sitting up and reaching looked freaking weird. So he had him just completely laying down, eyes still closed, having literally just been reborn. And what he did was have his hands on the ground be in the same kind of position his hands were in that cover. But nobody but you got it.
And that was a complete shot in the dark. I'm thinking, because he's like, it is a homage. You're like, okay. And then I come up very first guess with this thing, and I was like, okay. What it was, the only reason I even thought about it was, I'm trying to think of a cover that has Ben Reilly or Peter Parker naked and during the Clone Saga.
And that's just disturbing right there.
Which, that's the only one, folks. But yeah, I throw that out.
I was hoping people noticed by then that I thought Micah McClue was that each one of these covers that was being homaged was not only a Clone Saga cover, it was specifically a Ben Reilly cover. And that was actually part of me laying clues of what was going to happen.
And I kind of did, I'm not going to lie, I kind of did throw the guess out there. I think you're bringing back Ben Reilly, and you're like, "No, you'll just wait and see." Just in typical Stan Lee form, you're like, "Crap!" I can just see you on the other side.
I had literally, we had 8 variant covers on this, and I had literally threatened all the artists that if it got back to you, what was happening, somebody was going to die.
the sad thing is okay. 2 of the artists are actually on this, normally on this show.
Yep.
The other artist. Yeah, and one of the other artists does CSA, with Crawl Space Avengers, the other online ongoing web series on the Crawl Space. He's the variant cover artist for that. So these 3 of these guys are in direct involvement with me.
Yep.
Now I love their 3 covers, but I have to say my favorite cover of the bunch, besides the new Scarlet Spider costume, was the Spider Carnage costume. Holy crap, was that good.
That was incredible. And the weird thing, of course, you know how some artists can be, but Daniel Maynor, who did that cover when he sent it to me, he was all apologetic, saying, he had a hand injury recently, and so this just wasn't his best work, and he was really sorry, and he said, I'll do something else for you again in the future to make up for it. And then I look at the cover, holy shit, dude, that rocks!
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You did this with a hand injury?
Yeah, he's We got some extreme Daniel Hamels or Don Hamels, excuse me.
Dion.
You did Eternal Affairs, the webcomic, short-lived webcomic on there. That was by far his.
Ted Brandt did the Eternal Affairs series. Oh, okay. Dion did the pitch for the dead with me.
Yeah. Okay. Dion's cover absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. He does this, and that's hand painted. That's not like, you know, going into Photoshop and doing some digital work. Dion hand paints. And the fact that he could hand paint that is just incredible, and it looked amazing. And what knocked my socks off is he made the outfit Ben Reilly wore in Lost Years look like a costume somebody would choose to wear. Rather than some, you know, pieces of t-shirt that just got thrown together.
And the cool thing about the majority of these covers now, there's a couple like the one by Donovan where it's it doesn't have this. There was a billboard of Mary Jane, Emma Rose, from which is an obvious reference to was it Spider-Man 2 or Spider-Man 3? Spider-Man 2, right?
I believe it was 2. Yeah, that was Hambone's idea. He threw that billboard in there, and everybody else just worked off of his cover.
Yeah, really epic the cover on that. But I'll say this: Ted was who I was wanting to talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely, some of his best work.
Oh, I agree. I really agree. He rocked that, and he's, you know, it's been a while since he's done a Crawlspace cover, and
yeah.
You can just see how much he's developed in that time. I mean, I love the Crawlspace covers he did. Mm-hmm. But you can really see how far his development has come since then, and he continues to develop. And that's one of the things I love about getting to work with the sort of artists I do is, you know, just getting to watch him develop in this early stage. And all the ones I work with, you know, I work with people that I feel like are on a level that I can put their art on something I've written and be proud of it. Mm-hmm. So they're already on that level. But you continue to watch them develop, and it's just incredible.
You know, and the funny thing is as a writer myself, because you and I can, because we do something so similar, you know, but something completely different in terms of story and stuff. But like for example, Gerard has done almost every cover of Crawl Space Avengers, and every single one of them have been gorgeous.
Oh God!
When I first got the scans of the cover for number one, I was just shocked. Mm-hmm. That somebody was willing, number one, to pencil my artwork for my story. I never had ever had that before. And then on top of that, just what he's done, you know, in terms of pinups and stuff like that, the amazing cover to the most recent issue of Crawl Space Avengers, which all I said to him was, and I had Stella in mind when I thought of this, Stella being our co-host on Crawl Space, Gone with the Wind reference, go.
Oh, and he went.
And he comes up with this epic cover of the character of Kevin, which is based off of Kevin, and the character of Stella, which is based off of Stella, in this just in a tremendous homage to Gone with the Wind, and blew my socks off.
Never been so sexy.
First reaction to Kevin: I'm a hairy chested love god. I could just hear you saying that out loud, especially you're at work at the bank. And
little cut from that cover of me and Stella is still my avatar on the Crawl Space message board for a good damn reason.
And I love before that Enigma 2099's rendition of you. Where he's like, dude, I've never looked so badass. I'm like, well.
Yeah, and this is why I love CSA. I've got the most badass looking image of me ever, and the sexiest looking image of me ever. I love this series. I remember somebody saying with Enigma's cover, I didn't think a powder blue polo shirt could look so hardcore.
Yeah,
it does.
And you mentioned the color of the shirt, Kevin. And myself have been using the services of this whiz kid when it comes to coloring, named Brandon DP. I won't say his full name.
That's what he likes to go by. Yeah. B-Dog on the Crawlspace message board.
B-Dog on the Crawlspace message board. The guy is phenomenal. And every single cover for Crawlspace number 12 has been colored by him. He colored in like a 24-hour period, he covered Crawlspace Avengers number 7.
And to clarify, though, he colored six of the covers.
Oh, that's right.
To Crawlspace number 12. Dion's was hand-painted by himself, and Ted's was colored by a partner that Ted works with, Ollie Steven. And I've had no contact ever with Ollie Steven, but he did an incredible job on the colors of that, too.
Yeah.
Very well really, color look to it.
Yes, yeah, and that there's every single cover, there's a thing to like about it.
And you know, the incredible thing to me, too, if you look at these covers side by side, all six of these ones colored by B-Dog, they all have a different look to them. You know, a different look to the color. Especially if you look at Sebastian Roy, the final cover, the bottom cover on it, which is sort of the 70s Clone Saga cover with just both classic Spider-Man costumes. You can see like a dot effect that sort of has this really classic comic book coloring feel to it.
Yeah, especially in the windows.
Yeah, and this is, again, something that B-Dog just did. You know, he didn't talk to me about it. He just looked at the cover, and, you know, you can see that Sebastian's art has a very classic feel to it. And he just feels that, and he does it, and it's incredible.
Yeah, you know, and Gerard, I think he's comfortable enough with, because he's colored so many of Gerard's covers, because he colored almost all the covers for CSA, that he kind of knows what Gerard likes, too.
Yeah.
Great job there. The funny thing is, the damn pigeons.
Yeah, and that was another Hambone thing, and I just decided not to question him on it. You'd have to talk to him, but I looked at those and thought this very same thing that I'm sure you did.
And,
of course,
and
that was actually a coloring note when I sent it to B-Dog, was, you know, whatever you do, I don't care what color they are, the damn pigeons will not be red.
Okay, now, for those of you that are somewhat lost at home, Brand New Day, or excuse me, One More Day and One Moment in Time both feature this red pigeon, which is supposed to be, I guess, a red herring, haha, of Mephisto and his evil deeds and his dirty work. And so as these issues were coming out, because four of the Crawl Space issues came out the same time, they came out coinciding with Omit, and kind of be the counterbalance between the really what we all thought as administrative staff, the shitstorm that was coming.
knew it was going to piss people off.
I mean,
I think that was the intent of half the story.
Yeah, to get people talking again about Spider-Man. And surprisingly enough, we kept making the joke, there would be millions of casualties, millions. It'd be like Iwo Jima, you know. You got the invading forces of Joe Quesada.
And in the end, there were like two. But
yeah, exactly. There were only two casualties, which was really weird. considering the wake of Omit, or One More Day, good God. What is, to you, the best parts of the Clone Saga?
Usually they have the word Demathus on the cover somewhere. though not always. I admit even Demathus drops some stinkers, but I don't completely fault him for that. Lost Years, obviously. Come on.
Yeah.
And I hold Redemption in the same regard as Lost Years. I feel like those are two parts of one story, and they're both just epically good. And I think it's very telling that, you know, these are stories focused on Ben Reilly and J.M. DeMatteis, I found out the proper pronunciation of his name not all that long ago, so I'm still adjusting. He's a guy that can get into the psychology and really, you know, character creation like that, and figure out somebody who is a clone, you know, better than most writers really could. And so those stories are phenomenal, not only for Ben, but for Kane, and even for Janine Godbey / Elizabeth Tyne. It's great stuff there, and there's a lot of inspiration I'm getting from those. And the Ben Reilly era, the Ben Reilly Spider-Man era. Definitely had some clunkers going on, but it was overall, I think, the strongest overall period of the Clone Saga, and like I say, Dan Jurgens' run was fantastic, and I get a lot of inspiration for how to write Ben Reilly as the quote-unquote new Scarlet Spider from that, too.
And I think the biggest thing about that was the rejuvenation of the writing staff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to kind of go back behind the scenes, you had DeMatteis leave during Maximum Carnage. He plotted the Amazing issue. He left because originally that was going to be the apex. That was going to be the ending. The marketing department got involved, got in Bobby Linsky's ear, basically, and said, okay, we've got to pad this out.
More clones.
More clones. He left, and because basically what the plan was to give the reins off to Ben. Well, that wouldn't happen for another 3 months. DeMatteis,
it felt like longer.
Yeah, it felt like longer. But DeMatteis really wanted to get into doing Ben Reilly as Spider-Man, and and I think he was, because at that point they were starting to talk about, okay, we're not going to do part one of four anymore. We're going to do, you know, because
and then Blood Brothers came along and Return
exactly.
of Kane.
Yeah, but the biggest problem with that was, I mean, he couldn't really get into his own subplots. You know, he was having to finish off and do. And granted, in the beginning, the camaraderie between the four writers was such that, or the three original writers, and they brought in Tom DeFalco because they convinced him that he should write this. He was editor in chief at the time. He's like, maybe I should. Hell, I'll do it.
Dude, we need somebody that knows his shit. Come on down.
Yeah, exactly. So they all, you know, I mean, I'd love to have been a fly on the wall during those initial meetings, but at that point when it's starting to become a chore, it was really starting to affect the quality of the stories. Todd DeZango came in, and, you know, we talked about this in the last episode, but the first three parts of Maximum Clonage are written by Todd DeZango, is at least either written or scripted by him. So a lot of the blame goes towards him because that's his first real major exposure. He had done some plotting with Tom DeFalco and learned the ropes through Tom DeFalco, and then he gets thrown, you know, full on the fire.
Into the deep end.
And, yeah, he's thrown in the massive deep end. Okay, well, we're going to do a story that's wrapping all this. Congratulations, you've been promoted. So
no.
At that point, yeah, so you know, you got to feel bad for Todd DeZango, who ended up having a really fun run.
Since I'm actually on the podcast and not listening to it this time, I've got to stop you on one thing that I always catch when I'm listening to the podcast.
Sure.
Todd DeZango does not have an N in his last name.
Oh. Well, thank you. You know what? DeZango is I stand corrected, Mr. DeZango. I sincerely apologize. It's like DeMatteis and DeMathis.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know I do it, but just every time I hear it, like, there's no N.
Yeah.
Because I'm an anal bastard like that.
Well, I will correct the rest of the staff too, because I think they've all been running with that too. But DeZango, you know, he gets thrown in massive deep end, and he's having. I think at one point, I'll have to go check on this to make sure I'm not talking out my ass. But at one point, I think he was writing two titles.
The regular writer on Sensational, and he became the writer on Spectacular for a while.
Yeah, until DeMatteis came back after the Clone Saga. What happened was, we talked about Juergens. Juergens leaves because they were looking to wrap things up about halfway through the Ben Reilly run, which was about 6 months. Bob Harris comes in. He wants Peter back in the costume, so they're starting to take stabs. Yeah, Bob Ulinski, after pretty much being adamant with this is the direction we're going. You know, he caves and everything, and they're starting to bring back Peter. Well, then they delay it because
Juergens says, "F this shit." I know this never ends. I've seen where it goes before.
Yeah, because this is the similar situation that he had in Superman. But Onslaught comes along, which is the big giant Marvel event that was going on during the Clone Saga that pushed back the ending of the Clone Saga again.
And if you're reading through the Clone Saga, do yourself a favor and don't read Onslaught.
Yeah, because it does nothing. Literally, everybody's like, "Oh, to be continued in Onslaught Marvel Universe." They literally appear, the Peter and Ben together in one panel. That's it.
Yeah, I got the impression I didn't miss anything.
No, you don't miss jack diddly squat. I think they appear either on one page or one panel, one or the other.
But, while we're getting into that era, though, another one of my favorite things around them was Howard Mackey and J.R. Jr.'s. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker Spider-Man, or at the time just Spider-Man run.
Yeah.
That was incredible too. I liked the mob feel they went for in their title. Was a lot different than the other stuff that was going on at the time.
Well, and it had its own voice.
And it had JR Jr. art.
Yeah.
Let's freaking face it. One of my favorite covers is that one. I don't know what number it is, but it's Ben Reilly, Jimmy Six, and Daredevil. You know, all about to
that
kick
would be
some ass.
That would be number 74.
Yeah, that was an incredible cover.
The last cover of Ben Reilly in full costume that wasn't ripped to shreds.
really?
Yeah, at least in Peter that JR Jr. did. Let me rephrase that. Yeah,
the next one, Ben was pretty beaten up.
Starting to talk about things that are going on ahead of time. Just to talk a little bit about like what's coming up next, like in terms of the read-through. Like, Exiled, really a pivotal arc in one sense that this is where you start to get the backstory of Ben Reilly and Sewer Trainer.
There's a character I'm not bringing back. I'll tell you there's other characters I'm bringing back, and Sewer Trainer, the Jackal, Spider-Side, those are all staying on the cutting room floor.
You should write a deleted scene with all those guys, be like, hey, what about us? No.
Yeah, it would be like a big, let's do a throwback, a big Sentinel foot splatting them all. That would have been a great Onslaught crossover.
Oh, yeah. those movies were like how it should have ended.
Boom. Done.
Oh. Maximum Clone should have ended. Boom. Which he kind of did get with that with the Jackal thing. That horrible artwork from Omega. Yeah. But
A thing I found really interesting about Redemption, when I was listening to Brad Douglas's interview with J.M. DeMatteis, the big, massive three-part interview on the Spider-Man Crawl Space podcast probably 2 years ago now. He was saying that he originally really wanted Redemption to be another flashback, a sequel to The Lost Years that would also be a flashback. And I couldn't tell reading it. You know, I thought he did a very good job adapting it to modern day. And I think, for me as somebody that gets to follow up on this, it makes for an interesting story where Ben convinced Janine to turn herself in for murder and said, I'll be there for you every step of the way. You don't have to do this alone. And then he promptly died.
Yeah. Yeah.
The same month.
Yeah, well, when you look at things, and I'm going to check on this to make sure, but this was literally released right as they're starting to build up and do the march up to Revelations, because
if I'm correct, I believe I am. Redemption Part 4 was actually released the very same month as Ben Reilly died in Revelations.
That was what I was going to check right quick because I'm pretty sure you're right. But yeah, I mean, what a slap to the face for anybody that for DeMatteis.
Yeah.
To come out with this really, ridiculously good.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculously good storyline with Spider-Man Redemption, and literally have it come out the same month as the epic storyline that is Revelations. I mean, Revelations is the apex of the Clone Saga. It's a great, great storyline.
I thought, he did great work with Janine / Elizabeth.
I'm
looking forward to following up on it in Crawl Space Annual Number 1.
Well, nobody ever picked up on the fact that he had this long lost lover.
Yeah.
It was
pretty incredible.
Yeah. Which, that was one of those subplots that was kind of lost. Kind of like Gabrielle Greer, which I, for a long time, I couldn't remember her name. But Gabrielle Greer is actually the one thing that is talked about, we talked about in Planet of the Symbiotes. And getting ready for it was she actually makes that's her final appearance in the story.
Oh, poor character. If that's your final appearance, you are staying forgotten.
Well, considering the only people that really dealt with her was Kavanaugh. It was Kavanaugh's bad character, kind of drops off. You kind of notice that there's a theme here with the female love interest. They're all kind of pet characters.
Well, and can you say Brand New Day?
True.
Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Well, and then you had Desiree, too, and the Clone Sucker.
Yeah.
And,
of course, we already talked about Jessica Carradine.
Mm-hmm. Which, she was referenced in Amazing a couple of times, which one of my favorite splash pages of the Ben Reilly era is during Blood Brothers Part 2, where you got Ben swinging in this really awesome pose by Bagley, and you got Jessica's, you know, mug right behind it. Really great opening splash page.
Well, one thing that intrigues me about Jessica, she didn't know a damn thing about the clone stuff or Peter Parker. She just found out Ben Reilly was Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So she's been out there all these years. There's been a Spider-Man. She has no idea there were two different ones. You know, what the hell has she been thinking?
You know, and nobody knows. I mean, because she's not made an appearance since. So, mm-hmm. You know, when you if you were to bring her back, which you're not going to spoil it for me because you're a bastard.
Spoiler alert! I will.
Okay. All right.
I do have plans to revisit Jessica Carradine. I won't say anything more than that, but she's too interesting a character not to at least touch her.
You know, you have a plot that involves her needing Spider-Man's assistance. Does she go out looking for Ben? You know, I'm talking about like the current Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Well, Ben Reilly had a funeral, so I mean, does she know Ben Reilly quote unquote died, and does she think some other dude just became Spider-Man? I mean, it's all up in the air. You know, she could think anything.
Yeah. Well, and people are like, well, she interacted with Peter and Mary Jane. Yeah, once. Once.
And in the same sort of situation where, you know, Clark Kent can wear glasses and fool everybody, she didn't know that Ben and Peter were clone related.
Oh, we're cousins. Yeah, cousins.
Well, and the thing that gets me about that, and what I really toyed with actually changing when I did Crawlspace, although I decided I couldn't since it was so well established. Mm. It is so ridiculous that not only did they say they were cousins, they went so far as to decide that he was a cousin from Aunt May's side, which means they have no blood relation whatsoever. Except they look exactly the f*** alike.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Tell Jake Jonah Jameson that and see if he buys it.
Well, yeah.
So I really enjoyed with
tell Wolverine
to,
that.
Yeah.
New Richard and Mary Parker. and I swear to God, the only person that's ever picked up on that he knew Peter Parker's parents, was Juan Castro, who did the Return and Revenge of the Sinister Six novels. Hmm. He's the only person that's picked up on that and ran with it.
Yeah, well, and that's a rich history that I would like to do more with, and obviously I used it in Spider-Man Black, but the problem with it at this point is, you know, where in time do you ground the Parkers? You know, because you can't ground them in World War II anymore, because that makes Peter like 60-something years old.
Yeah,
but if you then move it up to the Cold War or something, then you're directly contradicting what's already been on panel. So yeah. They're really difficult to use unless you just do something like I did, which is, you know, build more stuff into what we've already seen and just not reference what era it is.
Well, you know, it's kind of like Frank Castle. Outside the Max series, it's just referred to as the War, not Vietnam. The War. Okay.
Well, Tony Stark has officially been moved up to Afghanistan, I think.
Yeah, which, I'm sorry.
Bothers me. It completely contradicts what we've seen on panel. And this ain't the DCU. We didn't have a crisis.
Although at this point, it's kind of sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I'd say there have been certain things, especially in Spider-Man, that I would describe as a crisis, but mostly for the fans.
Good. Yeah, that works out pretty well. Let's talk about Baby May. And
okay. I can't talk much, but I'll say what I can.
Okay, so did you think it was a good idea for Peter and Mary Jane to get pregnant?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought it was. It especially worked for the time. It was a very progressive, forward motion type of thing. And it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need good writers to pull it off, but it can be done.
Well, and it seems like nobody wants to touch this but Tom DeFalco.
Yeah.
And look,
Tom DeFalco wants his hands all over it.
Yeah. Well, it was Tom DeFalco's idea. let's be honest. I mean, the whole pregnancy in itself was an apex of – it was DeFalco's idea, and everybody's like, ooh, ah.
And he certainly milked an entire leg of his career out of it.
Yeah, I mean – And I'll tell you right now, I mean, some of the best old school classic storytelling series, one of the best old school series of the last decade was Spider-Girl. And in terms of Spider-Man series, the best old school writings was, as much as I hate to say it, Dan Slott. And as everybody's like, "Oh, Dan Slott can write Spider-Man." Now, I'm really, you know, hoping that we're getting the Dan Slott of that instead of the Dan Slott of Brand New Day, since how he's the guy, he's running the show. I really am hoping that we'll see that, and that I, you know, because I've had some people that have written in the show that have, you know, kind of dogged the fact that I dog on the new direction, especially with our Who Has Been Riley episode. But
well, I mean, how could you help it?
Well, yeah. I mean, granted, you know, 15 minutes of research would have made that story better.
Yeah, and you know, characterization couldn't hurt.
God, yeah. Well, you know, and you know, I think I had a person ask on the last episode that I was on with Crawlspace about, well, what, this doesn't make any sense with why is Kane mad at Peter? And I'm like, well, last time they saw each other, he was, you know, Kane thought Peter was the clone, and oh, by the way, had just sold his, basically, you know, sold his soul to the devil, to the Jackal. And Kane and Peter didn't interact until long after. Long. I mean, that was the first time they actually interacted was Who Has Been Riley since then. Because Kane was killed off in Maximum Clonage. Ben became Spider-Man before Kane actually returned. Ben was Scarlet Spider still when he returned. And then they had the Return of Kane storyline, which pretty much didn't do, you know, anything really. And then they brought in and then Redemption, which has no reference. If you read that story, there's no reference to Mary Jane and Peter in that story. It's strictly a Ben Riley, Janine Go.
God,
Kane's, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's evidence that he originally intended it to be a flashback story.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he adapted it very well to modern day, but he wasn't going to go so far as to include all this extraneous crap that had bogged down the Clone Saga, which was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as Baby May goes, I admit I've flip flopped on that myself. Because there you can find probably audio of me a couple of years ago saying that I don't want to see Spider-Man and Mary Jane with a baby. I don't think it was a good idea, and I'm perfectly happy to say she was stillborn and forget it.
Yeah.
I've changed my mind.
Well, you know, I mean, when you read and you look, and if you're taking this thing with Ben Reilly and running with it, because you, I'm not completely spoiled the past 12 issues for you. There's still other things. There's other subplots that I haven't mentioned, and characters that have been brought back that are really obscure that are, you know, somewhat important to the mythos. I mean, Melkin, is that how you say his name?
Minkin.
Minkin, yeah, Minkin. Yeah. I mean, the character of Minkin, previously, you know, some people that don't have no idea who that character is, some people might think that this is a character you just created. No, he's actually an established character.
Yeah, and I try to do that as much as possible because there's such a rich cast of characters in Spider-Man history.
I mean, sake, you brought back Buzz and Shirley from the Daily Grind. Now, granted, I brought back Buzz and Shirley from the Daily Grind as a homage. But you, I mean, that was a great supporting cast that you just can't help but love. And the way you seamlessly brought, you know, Brian and the Daily Bugle cast and everything like that, and just great, great stuff that you've done.
And I'll say I don't intend to use Shirley and Buzz and the Daily Grind like his, you know, main supporting characters ongoing or anything, but I don't think you can bring Ben Reilly back from the dead and not have him see them again.
Yeah.
You know, you can just kind of try to launch things into the modern world, but I feel like the issue needed to be as much him getting back into his life, sort of revisiting the old and creating a new. But, you know, you also need to do that stuff for the fans. The fans of Ben Reilly are, you know, the people that are really going to love this. Now, and I wanted to make him accessible to new people, and part of that is showing what made him great to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And I think you succeeded, because I think the issue was extremely well-received. I think there was a lot of people that this, you know, when you brought back Ben and when you did the whole Simon Peter thing, and there was a lot of people that were like, I don't know if I like this. I don't know if I like this. And then issue 12 came out, and they're like, okay, all right. In Kevin, we trust.
I feel like I'm constantly saying, just stick around for the next issue, seriously. And I know full well I do a lot of cliffhangers that'll make people trepidatious. But people usually seem to be fairly receptive once they read what the story is, and I think people are getting used to that. Which, you know, bringing back an 18-ish-year-old baby May at the end of Crawlspace number 12 kind of goes in that category.
Yeah, I mean, and then, of course, you know, we're anxiously waiting for the annual, because the annual answers a lot of questions with Harry and what he did in the years that he was dead.
Oh, and I'll tell you, the annual has four covers, one for each of the stories. And I'm looking at, as my desktop right now, Dion Hamill, who did the wonderful hand-painted Lost Years cover for number 12, did me a hand-painted cover of The Goblin King and Morbius that just makes you want to cry. It's so pretty.
Yeah, I definitely am very anticipating of the new annual.
And there's going to be some... there's going to be some stuff in the annual that's, I think, more pertinent to what's going on than you might expect, and there will be some answers coming in places that you wouldn't expect. Mm-hmm. Expect a note on Norman Osborn somewhere. Let's say that.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I've found interesting, is that people mostly seem to be assuming that the Green Goblin that showed up in number 12 is a clone that thinks he's Norman Osborn. And my question is, why can't he be Norman Osborn?
Oh, you're totally... excuse my French. You're the individual. As a reader, as a guy that's extremely supportive of what you've been doing, you almost wish you could actually do these in actual pages, not just as a script form. Because,
oh yeah,
God, I mean, you could play with so much. And holy crap, Emma Stone's going to play Gwen Stacy? Really?
Sorry. Mary Jane, I think.
No, it's confirmed. Emma Stone to play Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man.
They cast another redhead to play Gwen Stacy? Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, she's not technically a redhead. She dyes her hair red.
Oh, well, it looks good.
Yeah. unlike Kirsten Dunst, whose red hair fluctuated between 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Well, the first one, she wore a wig that looked, you know, red. Then she decided, I like this red thing, I'm going to dye it kind of orangey. Okay.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the next year of Crawl Space, because you're bringing back Kane.
Yes, and I'm bringing him back in the freaking costume. And there is a story reason for it.
Well, of course. But you want to know something really unique, and this is something that nobody ever talks about.
What's that?
The fact that it's a containment suit was never, ever, ever brought up in the written page. It was brought up in an interview, and it became assumed not. I think it was also brought up in the letters page. And I think they used the actual phrase containment suit, but they never, ever used it and used the phrase inside the actual issue that it was a containment suit.
Here I was thinking it was mentioned in Redemption.
It may have, and I'll have to reread it, because it may have been mentioned in Redemption, but that was something that...
Well, you may very well be right. I may have just known it and been reading it into when I was reading Redemption.
Well, yeah. And, it never really dawned on me. But as I was reading, I've been going through and reading Life of Riley again, because, number one, it's a great read. And I was just, wow. I was completely shocked as... Glenn Greenberg was talking about that, I guess. I think he was talking about in Redemption, I think is where it's at. I'll obviously reference it later. But, you're bringing back Kane. You got this 18-year-old May Parker. We won't call it May.
Can I give you a tease that'll make you pants?
Sure.
Iron Spider-Girl. That's all I'm going to say.
Iron Spider-Girl. Wow. Okay, so to clarify the two teasers, you're bringing back Carradine, Jessica Carradine, at least. in some way. Your Iron Spider Girl. You are bringing back the containment suit.
Yeah, and it will be mentioned as such.
What else can you bring back? You're already bringing back Janine.
Yeah.
Although only to kill her off, looks like.
Well, you know, it's just a title.
The title says Death of Janine. So you got all those. Desiree? Are you going to bring back her?
No.
No?
No plans. I'm not going to say absolutely no, but no plans.
Okay.
Ben Reilly's love life is going to be pretty crazy already.
Yeah, bring him. Yeah. I mean...
And we haven't even mentioned that he was, you know, hitting on Carly, who's with Flash Thompson, and
oh yeah, I told
number 12.
Oh yeah, so you got Carly Cooper, which is the only non-casualty from brand new day continuity.
Well, it depends on whether you consider Vin Gonzalez a casualty.
He's
in it, but he could definitely be considered a casualty.
Well, I mean, yeah, you bring back Ben, you use Vin and Carly, and Vin, you know, promptly gets, you know, whacked. In story reasons, of course. And then you have Carly Cooper, which at the time when you started writing her was not Peter Parker's love interest, was just this blank slate that you could basically take her in a completely new direction, which you did, which now I am so annoyed by Carly Cooper I could scream.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people have been really responsive to my Carly Cooper. I certainly love her. But I do get a little bit worried that people will start to not want to see her as much just because of the brand new day, Carly Cooper.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't want to see her as much, sorry.
That's become your new pet character.
Love her. Well, it seems like I almost, you know, get a new favorite character all the time, and the fans seem to go along with that. I mean, Toxin.
What you've done with Toxin.
Fun.
God, what you've done with Toxin was just absolutely hilarious. Added some really comedic elements. It just, you've only had him in, what, two or three issues?
Two.
Two. Okay, two issues.
I tended to have a short scene with him in Crawl Space number 12, but there was actually a lot of stuff that was cut from Crawl Space number 12.
Maybe a lot of stuff. Well, maybe you could do the Crawl Space number 12 deleted scenes.
Well, I'll work the important stuff in later, but some of it just ended up getting condensed, which I always hate, and sometimes I feel like it doesn't get the point across as well. But yeah, you'll see more Toxin later. Definitely, I've really grown to love him. And the thing that I love about that is a lot of people have said, you know, how they'd never really read Toxin before, but they love him. And, you know, Toxin is a character that's only ever been in two miniseries ever of all time, forever. You know, He's never appeared in a proper Spider-Man title in his life. But I love the character. You know, that's the reason, obviously, I'm writing him. I didn't go in to revamp him or anything. I'm writing the character I love. So the fact that, you know, just as a fan doing what I'm doing, I was able to introduce a bunch of people to this kind of underappreciated character I love is just incredible to me. I love that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Black Cat will be going different directions.
Well, considering what happened in number 11.
Yeah. That was one of the toughest scenes I've ever written. It's weird, but, you know, writing a scene as brutalizing a woman is kind of emotionally tough to write.
Yeah.
And more so than I expected.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it goes to a male's natural defenses. You don't want to see a woman get brutalized like that, you know. And it's a really brutal scene, but it's handled tastefully and tactfully.
I think you can probably feel sort of my feelings in Peter in that scene.
Yeah,
you know, if I did it right.
Yeah, and again, you know, really, the emotions of it are going to, you know, come through. But if this was drawn, it would be even better.
I agree. There's advantages and disadvantages of the format. I mean, the advantage is, you know, people get to use their imagination and can imagine the scenes kind of drawn by whoever they want. A lot of people say they imagine Mike Diodato drawing this, or John Romita Jr. would be the top two things people say, which is interesting because those are the top two people I have pictured in my mind when I'm picturing these panels. So I don't know if that comes across or if it's just that they are so perfect for this stuff. But, you know, if I was doing this as like a Spider-Man Forever series or something at Marvel, I probably wouldn't get a name that big. So it's kind of cool people can see this in their mind's eye as drawn by those guys. But on the other hand, yeah, I mean, all these, especially, I try to limit myself in fight scenes. I mean, I try to get some good fight scenes in there because it is a superhero action comic, but I try to limit the length of those action scenes because it's just not as interesting to read. So you need to keep them punchy.
Yeah, and that's something that I've struggled with Crawl Space Avengers.
It's a difficult wire to walk.
Yeah, and especially in the title, because I write in a prose script format that's unique to me.
Yeah, it's a very amalgam thing going on. It's unique to the format.
So you kind of have that walking that line to best describe it. It's difficult because I hate writing in prose. I can write a script all day, but you kind of feel like you have to, so then you go into this giant exposition and stuff like that. So it's one of those things where, as a writer, I can see where it'd be difficult in just pure script form how difficult it is to write, because at that point too,
you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, I can sit there and imagine, for example, in Amazing 500 with JMS, okay, John, go to town.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing is I can't, you know, just talk to my artist, really, when I'm writing a crawlspace script. I do a little bit of, you know, kind of really directed at the audience, but, you know, in places where I would just kind of direct the artist to do what he feels like, or, you know, make a joke to the artist or describe it in a funny way or something, or just describe the feel through a song or something like that. You know, you can't really do that with this. It has to be the panel descriptions are part of the story. It's part of the narrative. So it's not exactly like writing a comic book script. You have to realize it's its own thing, but at the same time, you're trying to make it as much of a comic book reading experience as possible.
Yeah, and I mean, anybody that's, it's kind of like a movie script in some way, because you do have the some of the blocking that's actually, if you've read movie scripts, where you do have the blocking in the scene settings and stuff like that, and what the characters are doing and describing it actually through the script.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that draws writers to writing comic books, is you basically get to be the writer and the director. Mm-hmm. You're directing the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is cool, because, you know, a lot of times writers will have, well, anytime somebody, a writer writes, you have a picture in your head of how this looks and how it goes, and then of course it gets filtered. If you're doing a movie script or something, it gets filtered through a director, and sometimes, you know, it'll work out, and sometimes it's just completely not what you wanted.
Yeah.
But, you know, with action scenes on that, I find sometimes it's good to, especially to write lines that are expressive. You know, a line that you read and you can see the facial expression on a person's face when they say that particular line. And that I think helps people sort of visualize. Like when in number 12, Peter unmasks the Green Goblin, you know, and sees his own face. Mm-hmm. And then immediately pulls the mask back down, starts webbing it to his head, and says, like, okay, we'll just leave that on then. You know, you read that line, you can kind of, you can hear Peter's expression, you can see his face, and I think that really helps you imagine that scene more than just describing.
I don't know, man. It's one of those things where it's difficult for somebody to, in your position, because you're dealing with a licensed character in an unlicensed story, and who knows?
Yeah, kind of side note, I found out even more of the limitations of that today. I'm going to New York Comic Con this weekend, and I had planned to print out a bunch of copies and bind them of Crawlspace number 12. So kind of, if I ran into any fans or anything, I could, you know, give them that sort of free thank you. And also, if I ran into any professionals that didn't work for Marvel, might be able to take it. But I went to Kinko's to get this thing printed out, because, you know, obviously I wanted the covers on some good cardstock, and I wanted them to bind it and everything, and they put in the CD, pulled up the images, and said, yeah, it's trademarked, we can't print that. Okay.
Well, crap.
I knew I was limited, I didn't know I was that limited. I wasn't going to charge for it.
Well, and yeah, it just depends on where you go sometimes, too. I can see their point, though. With the
oh, yeah. Like I told the guy, you know, I work in banking. I completely understand a crap load of ridiculous laws and regulations you can't break.
Right. Oh, yes. Okay, just kind of wrap this up a little bit because we've been going at it for a little over an hour and a half.
Yeah. I'm enjoying myself.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this interview, and this is the most informal interview you'll ever hear.
And I got to say, it's nice to talk to you on a podcast again after how many months has it been?
I know. Trust me, I know.
I'm sure you're keenly aware.
Yeah, actually, there's a running joke between me and Bertone that he's going to start a petition to get me back on the show. but I'm sure you know you'll have a little more of an idea. I know you're doing the Jeff Johns podcast, which I figured I would pimp right quick. Tell us a little bit about that right quick. It's your new podcasting venture.
I hope it's fairly self-explanatory. It's the Jeff Johns podcast, and what I'm doing is. I'm reviewing Jeff Johns comics, and every month I'm going to review the new comics that he wrote that came out the month before, and I'm also going to review the comics he wrote cover dated for 11 years prior to that same month, because he started his career as a comic book writer in 1999. So I've done a couple episodes to catch up on the new stuff, and I'll have one coming out soon that catches up on February to August of 99, and then we'll just roll with it in a full 11-year thing. And, you know, if I can do this for 11 years, we'll eventually catch up with all of it. You can find that on iTunes and at jeffjohnscast.libsyn.com, which I've got to thank my friend Alan Perez for, because he made that into a real-looking website, and I'm loving it. And Brandon DP, B-Dog we were talking about, made a banner for the top of it that really brought the whole thing together. So it's something I can kind of be proud of now. I'm enjoying that.
Well, it's kind of funny, because we've been doing this show for 4 years, okay, of Crawlspace.
Crawlspace,
4 years ago, did you even imagine that we would not only be doing this show together, but you would be doing your own podcast?
4 years ago, I barely knew what a podcast was, and I was sitting in my bedroom at my dad's house talking to you guys on my dad's house phone.
That's right.
The Crawlspace podcast.
Yeah, if you listen to those very, very early on.
And just don't, really.
God, yeah. The first five episodes, we were still trying to figure out what to do. Mainly because it was kind of because we were, you and I were so soft because I was on a cell phone.
Yeah.
You're on a landline. Brad's having the sound come in through the speakers instead of wearing your headphones. He's talking on the mic. So we have no idea what we're doing.
Yeah, it was a work in progress. And I tried to go back and listen to like that first episode just to see what it was like not too long ago. And, yeah, I'm listening on my headphones on my iPhone, and it's just like every time a speaker changes, oh, God, blasting in my ear when the thing gets amplified and then it has to go down, so I'm turning my mic up, and amplified again. I can't hear.
Yeah, you know, and as much as, look, I love you guys, but those are very hard. Because what Bertone and I were doing, we're actually going to be doing a big giant event where we were talking about how we were going to do the first 100 episodes and do like a review show. And that was our kind of our thing that we were trying to do as a little bit of a love letter to it. And I was going through and I was listening to these episodes and we're like, Jesus Christ.
I mean, I love you guys and I love Brad Douglas like a brother and would never disparage him, but you know, those first couple episodes are bad.
You know, I had
and he was, it.
Yeah, oh yeah, and he's like, oh yeah, those are shit. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, we were figuring out what the hell a podcast was at the time, really.
And
I think we figured it out pretty damn well, I gotta say.
Oh yeah, I mean, now that the show has just exploded.
And what, three spinoffs?
you got me. Well, let's go even further. You've got me, you, Stella. Bailey was brought in, but he's part of the podcasting network. You have Bertone, who was a podcaster even before that, but now he's been brought in. Donovan Morgan Grant's doing the Spectacular Web Show. These two guys are, you know, Donovan's been on the show and calling shows, but Bertone's actually been on the show as a panelist for the Spire Jeopardy. You've got T.S. Champ, who's a message board poster, who's done like 50 bazillion podcasts all under the banner of BTP Presents. Over a wide range of topics, not just comic related.
Oh, you've got Amazing Spider-Man Classics.
Exactly.
Front page.
That's powered by Spider-Man Crawl Space now. So there's at least 10 podcasts that are networked together that, you know, and of course Michael Bailey has his entire network that he has.
Yeah, Michael Bailey is a podcasting network.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, for a while there, Brad was trying to find fill in the fourth seat, and then the fourth seat turned into the fifth seat, and then the fifth seat turned into the sixth seat.
Well,
because
you know, one of those funny behind the scenes stories that Bailey got hired in because I was going to leave. And then I decided I couldn't, because I was going to drop the titles, and I decided I couldn't leave the podcast even if it meant reading. And but Brad had already offered Bailey, and he was like, well, I'm not going to withdraw the offer, so we just added another member.
Yeah, and I think, you know, of course, Bailey brings in a little bit of a historian aspect to it, too.
Everybody has their own personality and their own thing, and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, half of them have their own era, so it's a really good mix. And I think it's good that it's a big cast, because we have run into so many problems with not being able to schedule everybody at once, which, you know, has been mostly you for the past few months, but it's not just you.
No, it hasn't been just me.
We've all missed podcasts. And I think it's a real testament to the cast that, you know, we can be down a person or two people, or at one time I think it was even down three people, and,
yeah,
you know, still put out an entertaining podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one episode that was just me, Brad, and Stella.
Yeah, I think it was, because JR had to leave or something like that. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, I'm probably the biggest culprit of not being on the show.
Which, you know, we'd like to rag on you and everything, but it is sadly because of your job. We know you'd love to be there.
Oh, God, yeah. Which,
I mean, I'd hate to be in your position right now. You know, I'd be going crazy not being able to be on so many podcasts, especially, you know, the entire Omit block.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, when Brad asked me, because he got on Skype one day, and he's like, so what did you think of Omit Part 4? And I'm like, dude, really? You want to get me started on this? And I just went off on a tear. I said, we might as well record. Because, oh, God.
This will be the Zach Rants segment.
And this next part, Zach just completely ranting.
We'll get a rant jingle to go in there.
Right.
It'll be fun.
Oh, well, I mean, at least you got to hear me on Grim Hunt.
Yeah.
When I came back for Grim Hunt and completely not only ripped that thing up sideways and upside down, which you're like, "Put it on, brother."
You can't have a story that includes Kane without having you comment on it. You can't.
Yeah.
So whenever the hell, if they ever pick up this new tarantula thread, I don't care what you got to do to get out of work. You're gonna be on that damn podcast.
Which, now, well, and oh God, it's just one of those things where I love doing what I do with my job, but at the same time, because I do my job so well.
Oh yeah, it's a bane to succeed visibly.
Yeah,
because people will expect that from you all the time, and then more and more.
Yeah, exactly.
I found this out in my own working life.
And so, you know, like I say, it's, you know, I love doing this show because, you know, we are, although it's been, seems like it's been forever since we've got everybody on, 'tis in reality it has, but.
And really, though, if you want to talk about it, this is kind of a mini Crawl Space podcast here. I mean, me and you talking.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, that's the smallest Crawl Space podcast cast of all time.
Yeah, and one of the things when you said you'll want to interview me later on in the year of Crawl Space, I never imagined you actually, one, having the balls to bring back Ben Reilly. Because
I was just, like, you know, rubbing my hands together saying that. Like, really, dude, you're going to want to talk to me.
And I, you know, I am, you know, maybe we'll have you on for an episode or two where, you know, we're talking about a good story like Redemption or something like that. But I really, number one, I really do appreciate you coming on. It's been a blast talking to you. It always is a blast talking to you, Kevin. Crap, you're my brother from another mother.
my clone cousin, if you will.
There you go. Clone cousin. So, anyway, guys, just kind of minor programming note, we'll be doing, you know, a epic epic crossover with Teenage Wasteland and Ultimate Spider-Man podcast, which has been chronicling all the way from issue 1 through issue 96. I'm trying to remember the issue with Ultimate Clone Saga. And we're going to be teaming up with those guys over there from Teenage Wasteland, Zach Henderson and John M. Wilson, that particular name you might remember from Amazing Spider-Man Classics. So it's kind of a Amazing Spider-Man Classics, Teenage Wasteland, Spidey.com, Spider-Man Crawlspace, yeah, whole big giant love fest of
big incestuous Texas family.
Exactly. Thank you. Sorry,
you could have just as easily plugged Kentucky in there, man.
we'll insult my employers. We'll say Arkansas family.
That'll work. Hell, Bill Clinton's from there. I'm fine with that.
Well, Slick Willie, you know what I'm saying. But
I just want to say to the iTunes reviewers, there are no political aspersions cast here. It's just a good joke.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Clinton's an easy joke. Bill Clinton makes fun of Bill Clinton, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, but, I mean, hell, if he's not doing a bit, then I don't know what's going on.
But we're going to be doing that, and I've mentioned this in the show. We're going to be doing, obviously, you've probably, hopefully, already heard Side B of Maximum Cloning. And, of course, we're going to be doing those two miniseries. Then we'll pick up with Exiled and roll up through that Greatest Responsibility and Time Bomb are going to be one giant episode. We're just adding an extra issue, essentially.
One big mess of suck.
Well, Greatest Responsibility wasn't that bad.
Yeah, but not that bad in that family. Is
Yes. And then, of course, and I told everybody this, and everybody's like, oh, man, we're only doing one episode of the Scarlet Spider titles. Only one.
Oh, you're all going to die. That will be the final episode of the Clone Saga Chronicles after everybody on the podcast just breaks down from, you know, mental exhaustion.
Yeah. And then, of course, we're going to be doing the epic – and if that doesn't break us, then the Collins show will break us, because any Collins show I've ever been involved in has been rocky, to say the least.
But you get good bloopers.
Oh, God, yes. And we will, you know, of course, we'll have the bloopers at the end of the show with Bulk and Skull.
I swear to God that every time – I love listening to the Clone Saga Chronicles, but every time I finish, that damn music is in my head for at least an hour or two. Curse you!
Well, it's better than – God, the Uh-Oh, It's Magic song, which started off as a joke, and then Bertone ran with it. I'm like, dude, no, let's get some cool music here.
Although, I gotta say, are we ever gonna switch from Dashboard Confessional? Because I feel like I need to spread my mascara whenever I hear that.
Wow, yeah. I can see the point of it being kind of depressing. Of course, it is the Clone Saga.
So, wee bit emo. And the really terrifying thing, though, is I'm starting to like it. And that worries me.
Well, I'll tell you the whole, you know, I didn't. I only told him. I said all I want is the riff. And he's like, okay. And then he, you know, we have the ending that we have, which is great. And I'm sure it's playing over as we're talking right now. So, yeah.
I'll tell you okay. What. If you want a great song from a Spider-Man movie soundtrack, get you some "Learn to Crawl" by Black Lab. That's some awesome. That you is know, not in any way emo.
There you go. I'll keep that in mind, yeah. Mr. Cushing. And
that is my official suggestion as the guest of this episode. We'll make that
well,
my request.
Go. Well, you know what? We might actually make that request. Just for you, Kevin. Okay.
Just for this episode, probably.
Who knows? It may still be. We thought the Oh, It Was Magic was only going to be on one episode, and then we just ran with it.
Before we let the guys go and go about their listening to other podcasts' business, I do just want to say thank you very much for having me on the show. I know it was my suggestion, which is funny, but, you know, I really appreciate it. This is kind of my first time being sort of interviewed as a writer on a podcast, and that's pretty damn cool.
Well, you know, if you didn't do good work, I wouldn't have been like, yeah, we definitely need to do this.
Well, and, great. You know, you have been the biggest supporter of the series of Crawl Space the whole time, and you know, I really just can't tell you how much I appreciate that, and I'm so thankful that you like what's going on with Ben Reilly and all the clone stuff, because I feel like if you didn't like it, I'd have failed.
Well, that first of all, that's a huge compliment from some, and you, yeah, I'm not going to lie. When I read the dedication in the beginning of the issue number 12, I got a little misty eyed. I'm sitting there in the break room at my place of employment. Everybody's like, "What's wrong with you?" I'm like, "Nothing. Shut up."
And it's all true.
Well, and you know, go read it for yourself. It's really, really sweet and touching.
In a totally hetero way.
In a totally hetero way, yeah. Okay. Those of you that want to email me or Kevin or whatever, you can always contact us through the message board where you can find the Spidey.com section and the Spider-Man Crawlspace section.
Which you can also find by typing in crawlspacecomic.com.
There you go. And then, of course, you can leave us the email, clonesagachronicles@gmail.com. If you have a message for Kevin that you just want to send to me my way, I will forward it to Kevin, of course.
Yep, we know each other in real life, folks.
I know, right? Really? We never met, but, well, yeah. Anyway.
We were texting earlier. It was crazy. It was.
We actually had a phone call to each other. It was weird.
And now we're sounding less and less hetero.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, leave us emails, voicemails. You know the voicemail number by now, hopefully.
Is it 1-888 call Clone Saga?
Dude, if I could trademark that, I would.
That would be awesome.
But, yeah, and you can always leave us iTunes reviews on iTunes. We do always do appreciate any comments or compliments and stuff like that. We do appreciate, and Bertone, hopefully, knock on wood, we'll be back for the next episode. And
to edit like 3 or 4 that he wasn't in.
I know, right? Hey, he's the one that said he wanted to edit it, so okay. Kevin, great job having you on, and thank you so much for taking time out of your night. I know it's awful late right now, so
that's cool. Thanks again.
You can laugh, you can feel fine, you can dance with a little twist. Tell your pretty redhead babe, you forget that I exist. Can you see yourself in my bed at night? Would you leave me at the side of the road? Would you walk right up to me? Would you talk to me?
This is really, you know, one of my favorite podcasts to listen to, so it's actually a thrill for me to be on here.
Well, there you go. And like I say, you know, I might squeeze you in for redemption. We can.
Yeah, top. I'd love it. Let me know.
Yeah, we'll definitely. I think we're going to cover that right before Revelations.
If I don't have to reread comics.
Well, you know, I mean, you referenced it in the episode, but we're going to be doing some, and I'm sure, Bertone, you can cut us off here.
and Q learned to crawl.
Yeah, exactly. But literally,
oh man, he's going to bleep that whole thing, isn't he?
What?
I just realized that this episode is going to be very bleeped.
Probably. Although a couple got through with maximum clonage.
For Tony, if you're still listening and you've just gone through hours and hours of bleeping, we love you.
Yeah, when you said first time, I was like
I completely forgot. It's just me and you talking, and we're some profane mother.
Me being the worst.